The Scarab Swarmcast is recorded, mixed, and produced at Lord Wellington's Beef Trapeze in Columbia, South Carolina. Mostly. Scarab is the South Carolina area role players and board gamers convention held annually in Columbia, South Carolina on MLK weekend for 4 days. The Scarab Swarmcast podcast is hosted by and features many of the Scarab staff and guests. Views and opinions expressed on this show usually come from a random D20 chart or an FAQ found on the web somewhere, and usually don't reflect anything any sane person would or should think. I'm Toast, your kobold announcer. And now, here's your host, John Middles!
Holidays are here. Celebrate with cheer. Play some games and have some fun.
I'll have pretzels and beer.
Hey there, Toast. You know what time of year it is, don't you?
I sure do. It's Vormus.
Well, I'm not really sure what that is.
Oh, it's great. It's when kobolds get together and we burn pine trees for vor.
I see. That's not quite what I was talking about.
Oh? Are you one of those Shanavor or Voranzath types?
No. I'm still not entirely certain what those are, but I assume they're some sort of kobold holidays as well?
Something like that. They each involve burning different things for vor.
Okay. Well, that's sort of what I'm talking about. You see, it's the spirit of the season, as it were. There's a lot of stuff going on near the end of the year, Toast.
Awesome.
And I think we need to start up a new holiday tradition.
Oh? Hey, what did you want to burn?
Nothing like that.
Okay, so what's your big idea, then?
Well, for this special holiday episode, I think we should each prepare a traditional Nandi holiday song.
Nandi?
Oh, sure. Non-denominational holiday.
Nice.
That's a marketing thing.
I like it. So,
what we'll do is we'll each come up with a song that celebrates the season, but has no traditional or other holiday connotation to it. How does that sound?
Oh, I think I got you. I think I've just the song. It's gonna be super cool. Well, let's see. I need to take off and get my song ready.
Okay. You do that, Toast. And when you come back, I may need some of your help for mine as well.
Oh, sure thing.
Well, while Toast is busy working on his song for Nandi, just sit back and enjoy this talk that I have with Sarah Erickson of Renegade Games. We'll also have some game reviews, and a good time is going to be had by y'all. So all of you just sit back and relax and have a most enjoyable holiday season. And where did he put that beer? With me right now is the director of sales and marketing, or I believe she also can be called the Queen Bee, of Renegade Games, Sarah Erickson. Sorry, I didn't mean to mess up your last name there. How are you doing, Sarah?
Good. How's it going, John?
It's going pretty well, pretty well.
Awesome.
So what type of games does Renegade Games put out?
We put out awesome games. That's generally our goal anyway. We don't have a particular type of game that we're always shooting for, but I think in general, a lot of our current games have been ones that are very easy for anybody to sort of get into and just jump into this wonderful world of board games using our games. So a lot of family-oriented, casual gamer-style games, but that isn't to say that we've limited ourselves to that. We have a few games that do hit a little bit heavier crowd, but most of ours are very accessible.
And I'm looking through the listing of your games, at least on the website, and there's been a few that I've recognized, and the few that I've gone, wow, I didn't realize that was put out by Renegade Games. So that's kind of been interesting, kind of neat.
Yeah, we make all the good stuff.
There is a lot of, yeah, there is a lot of good stuff on this list. Well, tell us a little bit about Renegade Games, not just the games you put out, but...
Yeah, so we are a pretty small and pretty new company. We started in 2014, and our first really big game was Lanterns, which hopefully you've heard of by now, even if you haven't gotten a chance to try it. And that game was really kind of what started everything off for us. Renegade has since then put out quite a few more titles. We had 12 this year, but that's pretty good for a very small team. It's actually just me, my boss, who is the president of Renegade, Scott Gaeta, who is just a fantastic person in the industry. He's done a lot of different jobs. He worked for Decipher, who made the Lord of the Rings TCG, the original Star Wars TCG. He worked at Upper Deck, working on the World of Warcraft TCG, and then moved to Cryptozoic, worked on the World of Warcraft TCG there as well. And now he has started Renegade a couple years ago. So it's him and myself, and then also his wife Robin does accounting for us. We just barely hired a full-time creative director who does all of our graphic design. She's an incredible artist. She just makes all of our games look a million times better than they would have any other way. And we also have a part-time customer service representative who also does a wonderful job helping out whenever we have little minor issues. So we are a pretty small team, but we tend to all work really hard and get a lot of good stuff done.
Awesome. You mentioned Lanterns. I gotta admit, I played Lanterns probably for the first time maybe a year or two ago.
Awesome.
I enjoyed it a lot. The person who was showing me how to play it, he sat me down. It was pretty much him, and he's a bit of an alpha gamer as far as that goes. And he sat me down with like two other people who are very much alpha gamers, and I'm not an alpha gamer, and I totally whooped all their butts at it. So
that always feels good.
So I was like, yeah, this is a great game. I like this game a lot.
I think in any good game design, you have enough strategy that players feel like they're making good choices that matter, and enough luck that everyone still has a chance to win. And I think that Lanterns finds a really good balance of that.
Yeah. And my wife, Ruby, who's a bit of a hard sell on board games or any type of card games in general, said she really liked Lanterns because it was just so colorful and the patterns were really interesting.
That's one thing we do care about a lot at Renegade, is making sure our games are just absolutely gorgeous. And I love the game that we put out this year, Lotus, because I think it does that very well. And when you play it, you put everything on the table and you're putting your petal cards down and building these beautiful flowers. And you just step back for a moment and look at the table and you're like, wow, we created something really beautiful here. And we try to do that in every game that we produce.
Yeah, I was actually going to mention Lotus because that was another one that I've seen somebody play. I've seen it in action and it does look amazing. Just the way the cards, the way they all fan out, because you're essentially trying to, if I recall correctly, trying to create a lotus blossom, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. There are several different types of flowers, and the largest one that will give you the most points is the lotus. And it has 7 petals, so it's quite large compared to the iris, which only has 3, and then there's one every number in between. But each petal that you put down on the board will be a petal of one of those flowers. And once it's completed, you score it and people will get points. But as you're going throughout the game, you have different amounts of petals and different flowers being built on the board. So it sort of creates this beautiful garden in front of you.
When we went to Origins, I know our representative, Amy Gambrell, she kept trying to get over to talk to you at your booth, but you were always busy demoing. But one of the things that she was able to get for us to bring back was this packet of lotus seeds. That was actually packaged in is the sort of promotional. It was the promotional thing for the game. I want to say it was the thing on the packet actually said, by the time you plant these and they bloom, the game will be out. I think is essentially what it.
Yep. Yeah, the designers of Lotus, Jordan and Mandy, are this couple who created the game together, played it almost every single night, have played hundreds of times together, and just love the game and are so excited about getting the word out for it. So a few nights before Origins, they knew they were going to come and be at our booth and be sort of wandering around the hall, but they had this great idea that they should create these little packets of seeds to give out to people with the idea that when they bloom, they would be about the same time as when the game came out, based on the suggested blooming time of the flower packet. So they made all of those and stamping and pouring the seeds in and sealing them the night before Origins. They made hundreds of these things and gave all of them out at our booth, and everybody got excited. It was wonderful. I came home and planted mine, and they quickly got eaten by my dog, but they were awesome. It was a great idea. Yeah, that was very, very smart marketing on their part. I will not take credit for that. That was all them.
See, and that almost sold the game to my wife Ruby without her even seeing the game, because she really likes flowers and she likes planting. So
she must have a greener thumb than I do. Hopefully at least some of them did survive in her garden, and hopefully they'll bloom next year, hopefully.
So aside from Lotus, I understand that fairly recently, as of this recording, which is around the beginning of December, fairly recently, Renegade Games had, you guys had several games that sort of came out kind of around the same time?
Yeah, as we got closer and closer to the holiday season, a few games did get on top of each other a little bit, and we had three games release all in the same week right before Thanksgiving. And part of the reason we did that was planned so that the retailers could have that extra Black Friday holiday weekend to help sell these products. And the reason that was super important to get them to those retailers in time for us was that two of these products are very retailer focused. The first one is Lanterns, the Emperor's Gift. So it's an expansion for Lanterns that adds some extra complexity without taking away too much of the beautiful simplicity of the game. You get extra cards that there are five of them in the box, and you pick two every time you play. And those two cards will be put on in the general area, and people can spend these tokens that they're collecting to activate them. And they let you do things that are basically cheating. So one of them will let you turn a tile that's already on the board before placing your tile, which is a nice sneaky way to match things up really nicely. There are other ones that let you spend your favor tokens to get points, which is something you couldn't do in the base game. So there are a lot of little things like that. And when we released the original Lanterns about a year and a half ago, we worked with retailers very closely to do a really good launch and get a lot of excitement out there. And they were spectacular. The retailers did a really good job of helping us out with that launch. So when we knew we were doing this expansion, we really wanted to involve them. So we decided that we would put the expansion out into the wild before the holidays started, but only in local brick and mortar hobby stores. So there won't be any online sales of it available until after Christmas, which really gives retailers something special. They're always competing against online sales, and it's tough for them. So we wanted to make sure we gave that to them.
That's very nice.
Well, Scott used to own a retail store, and I currently own a store in Bozeman, Montana. So we're very connected with the retailer industry, and a lot of them are close friends, and we understand how important they are. So we really did want to do something special for them. The other thing we did that we put out also on the same day for the retailers is a gift box. And it's sort of a Christmas present to our fans and to our retailers. We gave 10 copies of this box to every retailer that met a certain order minimum requirement with us over the season. And inside this box is 9 promo cards for a bunch of our different games. And the idea is that since the retailers got them for free, they would also be able to potentially give them away to customers for free with a minimum purchase as well. And so hopefully that's happening now. If you have a local store, we encourage you to go and check it out and see if they have these, or ask them about them, because inside the promos are very cool. There's one for Lanterns and Lotus, Covert, Clank, Snowtails, Dicey Goblins, Fuse, World's Fair, and Apotheca. So all of our really big hits for the year.
Very cool. Very cool indeed.
Yeah, they're kind of fun. So we had Lanterns, the Emperor's Gifts, Santa's Renegades, and then we had one other game come out on the same day as well. This is one I'm personally very excited about because it's from one of my favorite designers in the world, Dan Kassar. He made Arboretum, which is an older game, but it's one I really, really love. And we met him at an event called Unpub in April. And Unpub is basically a small event for game designers who want to get a lot of playtesting done on their current designs. And he was there playtesting and collecting data and statistics about his latest game, The Blood of an Englishman. So we met him there, we played his game, and we just fell in love with it. But he was really worried that he didn't have enough data yet. He really wanted to make sure that the game was incredibly balanced and perfect because it's an asymmetrical two-player game where one person plays as the giant and one person plays as Jack in the Jack and the Beanstalk themed world. And he wanted to make sure that those two sides were evenly matched and that one side wouldn't always win. So he'd been doing testing for years and years. And when we saw it, we knew that we had enough connections out into the hobby industry world that we could get the extra playtesting done that he needed. And so we got that done this summer, had lots of good feedback from people, made some very minor changes. And then it finally just came out on November 23rd. Well, so we're pretty excited about that.
Yeah, I was going to say that one looks really neat to me. I'm always looking for some two-player games that me and my wife can play. And the theme, just the general theme of that one really kind of hit on a lot of things that I like as well with the whole Jack and the Beanstalk.
Yeah. I think it's a very cool theme that I'm surprised has not been overused because it is so good for two players. He originally did have more stuff in there. So he had the cow and the mother and the giant's wife and all these different characters kind of involved in the story in the game and just stripped it down and cut all those scenes out. So it's just this beautiful balanced two-player game, which I think was a really smart design choice on his part.
So looking also through the list of games, I see there's one pretty big one right now that I'm noticing. It's this game Clank.
I have been getting a lot of questions lately about this game because it is crazy popular. We'll put a game out and we often sell out at release. But then it goes to distributors and it goes to retailers and then some of it goes to the hands of the fan. And by the time we have enough, it will take us a little while, maybe 3 months to get it reprinted and restocked and all the way back onto retailers' shelves. And usually about at that time is when retailers are running out of the game. Clank has been totally different. We released a very small amount of it at Gen Con and we had not said anything about the game prior to that. It was just a bit of a surprise that it even showed up because we didn't think it was going to. We didn't think it'd make it on time, but it showed up and the response at Gen Con was incredible. It made it to the number 2 spot on the BGG hotness list and we sold out of all of the copies that we brought in a couple of hours and it just went crazy. And that excitement seems to have not slowed down yet because we are totally out of it. All of the distributors are out. All the retailers are out. Amazon has it for insane prices right now. So I did want to let people know who are looking for this for Christmas presents. We have a very small restock coming in that should have been here today, but looks like it'll probably be delayed until tomorrow. And that gives us just barely enough time to get it back to retailers before Christmas. So if you're looking for it, it's coming, but it's a little later than we hoped. We wanted to have a huge restock before Christmas, but it didn't happen. But the reason this is so popular is because it's a game that I think people are very familiar with a lot of the parts of it, but we put it all together and it's just really super fun. It's a deck building game that's also a push your luck dungeon crawl, with the goal being that you'll go down into this dungeon, you'll snag an artifact, and then you'll run out because you can only carry one artifact. So once you have one, you might as well leave. But as soon as one person leaves, it puts a clock on everybody else and they all have to get out or else they die in the dungeon within four turns of the person who originally got out. So you don't have very much time. And if you're way down in the dungeon because you're greedy and you really want one of the better artifacts, you might not have enough time to make it out before either you die from being attacked by the dragon or the dungeon collapses because you wasted too much time. Oh, so wow. It's very intense. And of course, people all say that their games are fun, but this one has an element of just fun, exciting suspense that I have not felt in the game in a long time. So that's, I think, why people are so pumped about it.
I was going to say that also hits on a lot of the things that I like about games, too, because I like some of the more dungeon crawl sort of themed games as well.
Mm-hmm.
And with that press your luck mechanic in it, that makes it even
better. I think that's a really defining part of that game. And a lot of people I've talked to said, oh, you know, I'm kind of over deck builders. I've played a lot of them. I want something fresh. And the thing about this game is that even though it's a deck builder, you kind of forget you're playing a deck builder. It doesn't feel like any other one you've played before because you just have this built-in knowledge of how all the game mechanics work, which is really handy for getting started. And it gets you to the fun part of the game really quickly, which is diving into that dungeon and making those tough choices of when to turn around and run and when to go just a little bit further to get that little bit better treasure.
So with Renegade Games, again, like you said, you only make the cool games or the fun games. No, what I was really going to say was, yeah, there's just such a huge variety of games that you guys put out. There's like Double Feature was, you could say, is a bit of a party game. And then you've got the ones that are a little bit heavier, like maybe, I don't know, like Clank, I guess.
I would say Covert is probably our most sort of intense gamer experience game. It's more of a Euro game, and I love that type of game personally, but it is one that I probably wouldn't play with my non-gamer friends or like my mom, but I would definitely play Clank with any of those people.
And I've had some friends who've recommended Doom That Came to Atlantic City to me.
That one's kind of interesting.
I was going to say, if nothing else, the miniatures make me want to buy it.
Yeah. it's a silly game. So when you look at the board, it's going to look a lot like Monopoly, but it's a bit of a parody of Monopoly because instead of building up real estate, you're tearing it down and cultist groups are popping up that are helping you build the warp gate that you need for your great ancient one to come through. So it's a Cthulhu meets the anti-Monopoly sort of a game. It's very silly. It's a game by Keith Baker, who also designed Gloom. And I think that it feels very much like one of his games because it's a little bit different and a little bit silly.
Okay. That explains a lot then.
Yeah. Keith is a great guy. He's got some really interesting ideas. And the guy who did the miniatures for that game is not actually in this industry until he made that game. He's Paul Kadana. I think I might be saying that wrong, but he's done a lot of stuff in movies. So he's created huge figures in the background for scary movies and props and masks and that type of thing. And he never worked on this scale before. And he kind of went crazy making these miniatures that are just so much more detailed and have so many more angles and things popping off of them than any sane miniatures creator would have made because he had no preconceived notions of what you should do. Normally when you make a miniature, if you look at them, there's one angle where they're actually pretty flat, where everything is pretty close together so that you can put them in a mold and have the mold be as shallow as possible. So most miniatures that you look at either will have a piece glued on or will just have them all be pretty flat from one angle. And his miniatures were not like that at all. They were just sort of spiky and crazy in every direction. And it made them more expensive to make, but oh my gosh, they're beautiful. They're just really, really well made.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. So thank goodness for Paul having no idea that that was a pain.
Where is Renegade Games based out of?
Well, we are a company of the 21st century for sure. We do not have one particular home base. We all work from our various homes. So I get to be at home with my dog all day long, which is wonderful. But our official address is in Southern California, where my boss and his wife work from. Okay. And coincidentally, where our graphic designer is for now until she moves to Costa Rica in a few months. But for now, all three of them are in Southern California.
That's kind of a neat thing to be able to do then, to be able to work in an environment like that. You don't necessarily have to be in the same geographic location and still be able to pull off a job such as this.
It's amazing. And it's really especially nice for me because I do own a local store here in town, so it would be tough. I did leave for a year while still owning my store to work for Scott when he was one of the owners of Cryptozoic. I worked down there in Southern California for a year. And it was tough for me to be away from the mountains and away from all the hiking trails I like to be at, but also away from my store for a year. It's a really good community. They help me out a lot with things like product testing. I do a lot of prototyping with them. So being able to be here with my store was a big, big bonus for me. But I think really, if you're able to work from home and that is an environment that works for you, it's wonderful. It doesn't work for everybody, so I'm really happy that I got this opportunity. It's been good.
Very awesome. Yeah, I keep thinking, gosh, if I could work from home, that'd be great. And then I think about it, like, I don't know. There's too many temptations around where I am.
So Scarab is coming up soon, correct?
Yes, it's coming up in January. It's MLK weekend.
Wonderful. That should be fun.
And so because of that, it's actually a 4-day convention. So it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
Ah, wonderful. Oh, that'll be good. And I know you have a pretty significant library as well, yeah?
In the convention area, we'll have almost a whole wall full of just shelves that have all the games on them so that people can actually see the boxes. And and we put them in alphabetical order, so they're up there. But then we have so that people aren't just standing around just staring in a board game sticker shock, as it were, trying to figure out what to play. Ruby's actually put together this really nice way of indexing these. It's this book that you open it up and it's got these sleeves in it, kind of like baseball card sleeves, and it'll have the name of a game, a picture of the game, and all those nice little stats that are on every board game box now, number of players, age, the rough amount of time that it takes to play it.
So, that's handy. So I like that.
Yeah. So it's actually, I want to say last year was the first big year that we did this, and everyone loves it because you can flip to this book. So if you're going, well, I want to find something that I can easily play in about 30 minutes. It's a nice way to kind of flip through the book and go, this one sounds neat. And then when someone checks it out, we put actually a marker in front of it so that it's still in the book, but it's got something to indicate that it's been checked out. Yeah, it's just a really neat system. And then back of it, we actually kind of keep a tally of how many times certain games have been checked out so that we can give that kind of feedback to people as well.
Oh, I'm excited to hear how many times our games have been checked out. That'll be fun. Hopefully a lot. I love that idea of the book, though. We do something similar at my store with Magic cards. We take the Magic card booklet that comes in the fat pack for every new set, and it has a catalog of every card that's in that set. Mm-hmm. And we laminate those and then put binder clips on them to keep them together. And then every time we sell out of a card, we put a little smiley face sticker on it so that people know that it's out. And if we don't have a sticker on it, that means we have it in stock. And so they can look through the book quickly and know what we have. But we keep all of the games behind the counter, or all the magic cards behind the counter, yeah, so that they stay organized and then people can find them more quickly. So it works out very well for us.
Yeah, that's very nice.
Yeah.
Because so many stores I've walked into where you go to look at their magic cards and it's just the rows and rows of just the card boxes just sitting there.
You flip through it
and you go, oh, this is just a bunch of forest here. I can just flip through. Wait a minute. There's something in between some of these.
Yeah. We do have a small section of cards that are like that, because I found that some customers really enjoy the excitement of flipping through cards and not knowing what they're going to find. So we intentionally leave some unsorted cards just for them. But for everyone else, we have very organized areas so they can find what they're looking for more quickly. I think that's smart to do with the board games too. I was recently thinking of redoing all of my board game library by number of players, because that seems to be one of the main limiting factors when we're trying to decide what game to play with our group. So I think that's smart.
Yeah, that's one of those things too. It's like, well, how, because originally I was like, oh, well, why don't we organize this based off of how much, you know, how much time it takes to play. And then, I don't know, there's just too many factors there.
Yes. Yep. Well, that'll be fun. I hope your event goes quite splendidly.
As do I.
Well, if you do want to find out more about our company or what we have going on, you should definitely check out our Twitter feed at Play Renegade, and also our Facebook page, which if you search for Renegade Game Studios, you will find us. And it is a really, really good time to check out both of those pages right now, because we are doing giveaways for the rest of the time between now and Christmas. Every day is a new giveaway. On the weekdays, not the weekends, I get a little bit of a break. But all those other wonderful weekdays, we were giving away all of the games that we have made this year. Ooh. Plus a few other ones that we were just really excited about. So if you want to go check that out, I would be very happy to get some more interest in our giveaways, and you have a pretty good chance of winning. So that's exciting. We also have lots of fun stuff on there. My sister does a lot of craft projects, and she is very into gaming as well. And so occasionally I will post some of her game-related craft projects. They're always pretty fun. So if you're into that, it's a good place to check it out. We have a blog, too, where you can go and find those things. And in January, we have some very exciting game announcements to make that we'll be posting on all of our social media as well as our website, which is renegadegames.com. So definitely worth stopping by and seeing what games we're announcing for the first quarter.
I've been talking with Sarah Erickson, who is the is the official title the Queen Bee?
Oh, you can call me either. It's fine.
But she's with Renegade Game Studios. Thank you again so very much, Sarah.
Yeah, thank you too. And I hope you have a fantastic event in a couple months here.
And now the Scarab Swamcast is proud to present Scarab Game Reviews. Reviews of games found in the Scarab Game Library.
Double feature by Renegade Game Studios. It is for 4 to 10 players, ages 10 and up. And it should take between 20 and 30 minutes per session.
The game double feature is the fast, fresh, new party game about the movies you've seen. Players compete to quickly name a movie that links two different category cards. Thousands of combinations offer up new experiences and hilarity! No two games will ever be the same, and all you need to know are the movies you've seen!
Dun-dun-dun. Well, that being said, at the table here to help us review it is Ruby, Tim, Calvin, whatever
his name is. IGN 2016.
No, Reverend Professor something or
Doctor.
Another.
Some of those are not appropriate titles yet.
Kristen.
Eventually.
Mitch has joined us, and of course myself, John. So what were some of the good things about this game, everybody?
Mac and me.
The laugh.
You actually get to laugh and joke around quite a bit.
Yeah. It has a similar vibe to like Apples to Apples, where you just kind of joke around.
Yeah.
Right. It's a good little social party game type thing.
It also brings to light certain movies that you should have seen that you may not have seen.
That's right. You learn things about your friends. Like we learned that Kristen has never seen Down Periscope.
I assume this is
as
like
we all shake
airplane
our
only underwater.
Oh my gosh. You do not compare the two, okay? They are two different movies.
All right. So Back to the review.
So what's some other good about this? I think it gives you a nice little spread of categories to choose from.
It does.
Yeah.
Because basically you're flipping over two cards, you're reading out what's on the cards, and everybody has to shout out movies that meet those two criteria.
I mean, it's super quick to learn how to play, too. I mean...
Yeah, the, even reading through the rules.
Right. It does give a couple variants in there, but I didn't really... we didn't really go through the variants, because one of them was kind of... meh. So anyways, so that was, I think that's a good amount of good for the game. So what's some bad stuff about the game? Kristen, I think you had something bad to say about the game.
Yeah, this box.
This box was very inefficient.
It's the humongous box, and all it's got in it is cards.
And it also, for having the different categories, has no division of the cards, so there's no like separation. It's, you basically toss it in the box and they all get shake up. Yeah. So when you go to set up the game again, you gotta resort out everything.
So you have this big, huge box that takes up a whole lot of space in your shelf.
Maybe the size of the whole deck is the size of two packs of playing cards.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So they could have put
box
it.
Is,
they could have put it in just a small tuck box or something.
Right.
Sold it that way.
So the box looks pretty though. It has lots of neat art and very colorful and eye catching. So
you could say that one of the bad is that you are relying on the directors who
the person judging.
But I mean that's not really bad. That's just part of the game.
Yeah. We joked around a bit, so the time we went over the time kind of frame, but not by much, in all honesty. So overall, it's fun. It is just what it says it is. It's a party game.
Yep.
It does what it says it's going to do very well.
So again, that's anything other that you might want to say in this thing? Because I'll say Con Air.
Adventures in Babysitting.
Con Air did not win anything.
Oh,
good.
Nope.
Came close though. All right. So again, that's. Double feature, you can find that in the Scarab game library, so come to Scarab and just so that you can play this.
Only this.
Hey, we were playing Chopstick Dexterity Mega Challenge 3000. 3000. 3000. Yep. By Mayday Games. Good for 1 to 3 players, ages 8 and up. And takes about 15 minutes, but depending on how much you've drank and whether you're making it very intense, it can probably go a bit longer, but it's a pretty fun game to play.
Several years ago, the lower house worked with Vegeta Television Concern to produce a new game show that promotes dexterity and usage of chopsticks. They call it Chopstick Dexterity Mega Challenge 3000. This show with host actor Kazuo Yamura quickly becomes very popular among all ages, spawning comic book series, merchandise, and best of all, home board game version, all available for the first time in American. Now for the first time, test your chopstick skills in this thrilling tabletop game. Grasp shapes with chopsticks to win pieces. Whoever obtains the most pieces wins and become the Chopstick Grandmaster too.
So this game was for like Alicia, who is, I don't think has been on the show yet.
No.
Like she said, is for 2 to 3 players. We had 6 people at the table, and I think each of us really enjoyed and kind of participated in this. So basically in this game, you have a bowl that has a bunch of little wooden sushi meeples.
Yeah.
Sushi and nigiri meeples in it.
Sushi meeples.
And you're trying to grab them with actual chopsticks and put them into your bowl based off of whatever the little challenge chip says you're supposed to grab. And whoever wins that wins the challenge chip, and first person to 10 chips wins! Hooray!
Yay.
So, the 3 people who played in it were, of course, Mitch, Alicia, and Ruby. So it's varying degrees of skill in this dexterity game. This was definitely very much a dexterity game.
Yes.
So guys, what was good about this game?
It was a lot of fun. We were laughing and joking and
very competitive.
Stealing. Too. Yeah, stealing from each other.
Poor Mitch, though. I felt a little bad.
I didn't.
Yeah.
Mitch, what did you?
I felt bad until I saw he was catching up to me.
What did you think was good about the game, Mitch?
I thought it was a completely fun game. I just...
not as good as
I'm
us.
Just not well suited to compete against my other two
competitors.
Yeah, the other two players at the table.
Well, I think we're probably the only other two people that are as used to using chopsticks as maybe John might have been the other one, because John and I, full disclosure, pretty much eat with chopsticks at home all the time, because it's one of those ways we thought about it and we eat a lot of Asian food anyway.
All right.
But one of the other things that I hadn't thought of, and I'd read it around somewhere, is that by eating the chopsticks, you're taking smaller bites and you're taking more time, so you feel fuller, so you're not eating as much. So that's part of the reason we started eating with all these chopsticks. So,
but that being said, we're talking about the game Chopstick Dexterity Challenge 3000.
That's all to say, I'm the boss with chopsticks. I will beat anyone.
You did kind of own that game.
Yes, yes.
A little smack talk.
All right, so what's so what was some of the what would be the bad of this game? Mitch!
Why did we go to him?
The player versus player combat.
See, I thought that's part of the good.
We had to take a few commercial breaks to patch Mitch up and bandage him a few times.
Because there was a lot of scrambling, a lot of sticks flying at that one ball trying to get those wooden meeples.
So speaking of one of the very flying. Entertaining, though possibly bad points for this game.
Wear safety glasses.
Was that the bowl that you're digging out of, which is a very nice bowl.
It is.
All of the bowls and chopstick were great. However, when you have three people at different angles all trying to go for a bowl, it rolls. So maybe keep a
square
with at ledges or lips or mat. So that
like a play mat.
Don't fly so away.
Build a pit of fire.
Build a pit of fire.
So I actually do have one bad complaint. The chits. There are symbols for some of the chits that are numbers, like the 4, 5, and 6. They were very hard. 3, 4, 5, and 6. They were kind of hard to read, but we weren't. John was like MC, so he ended up. But apparently the way you're supposed to do it is each player turns a chit, and then the challenge begins. And then the next player turns a chit, and the play begins. So it may... If one person's doing it, they're hard to read. That's what I'm getting
at. Yeah, some of them are hard to read. Cool. Well, any other bad comments on this?
The tentacles and the shrimp?
They're close.
I think
that makes it interesting.
That's true. It does make it interesting, because if you grab her and you realize afterwards,
it's the wrong thing.
I think anybody who is familiar with sushi, true sushi aficionado, would have known the difference between a tentacle and a shrimp.
What's she saying?
Wow. I was all about the tentacles, apparently.
No, they were pretty similar.
Yeah, they are.
All right, what about anything else you want to say about this game?
I think the different shapes were actually really cool, because there's the roll, and it's actually a round sphere, not a sphere, but a cylinder. And the shrimp is shaped like the shrimp emoji online, and the tentacle is a weird shape. I wouldn't have associated that with
tentacles, right?
Unless, you know, and then there's the little nigiri. Again, that was kind of a weird shape, but I guess how can you...
And the onigiri.
And the onigiri, which I would have just called it rice ball, because... It's the little stereotypical rice triangle.
Triangle rice?
Yeah. But
weird triangle round thing.
So,
or as Pokemon calls it, a donut.
Donut.
These are weird donuts. Mitch, so, Mitch, any final words?
He's wiping
thank
away
you,
the tears.
No, I mean, it was a fun game. I have no problem losing horribly. It didn't bother me at all.
If you're interested to see the actual play, I know that Calvin C. Korn here on Facebook did a live stream of it.
I did share it to the Scarab Facebook group.
Correct. So you can look at that and see how much fun we had with it.
Yeah, especially the winning piece.
I'll see if we can extract those videos and throw them out there onto YouTube with some colorful names so other people will randomly find it.
Couldn't help it.
We're gonna make this go viral.
He dropped it on the table. It was like
viral.
I was too busy laughing.
Yeah.
Right. I got it. And the cat's just there, like sniffing at it. I'm like, okay.
So as you can tell, there was a lot of fun, a lot of laughter, a lot of crazy activity going on here when we were playing Chopstick Dexterity Mega Challenge 3000 by Mayday Games. Hey, if folks out there want to play this game, where's a good place they can go to go play this thing?
Scarab Gaming Convention.
Scarab Gaming Convention.
Yeah.
All right, you heard it here.
I believe it's available in the Scarab Library for people to check out and play during the gaming convention.
That's correct. Check it out.
Roll for It, Deluxe Edition, Red and Purple also, by Calliope Games, 2 to 8 players, ages 8 and up, playtime of about 20 to 40 minutes. Roll it, match it, score it. It's fun, it's fast, and it's easy! Take turns rolling dice and matching cards, trying to score 40 points. Each roll presents new opportunities with fun decisions to make. The rules are simple. Roll it, match it, score it. But look out, other players may steal the cards you're shooting for. So hurry, pick up the dice, and roll for it.
All right, well, I actually played this game with my mother. We took it on one of our vacations or holidays or whatever up there, and the two of us played it. So Ruby didn't actually get to play it, just me. So I'm gonna give you the lowdown on the on some of the good stuff, the bad stuff, and all that fun stuff. Now, like Ruby said, we actually have a couple different versions of this game in the Scarab Game Library. We have the the red and the purple, which are just two singled decks, is basically what those are. You can combine those together so that you can get more players. And we have the deluxe edition. And this one, the max number of players for it was 8, I want to say. Basically, the red and the purple ones, the max players are 4. You combine them together to get 8. But you don't want to combine it with the deluxe one, because the deluxe one has different art, and it's definitely more set up for just itself. The deluxe one actually comes in a tin. It's got a nice little bag. The cards, like I said, have really nice art on it, and it's got a ton of dice, because you choose the color of your dice, and you're kind of bidding on trying to match up the dice that you've rolled to the actual numbers that are on the cards, and the first person to match them all up gets those cards and the points associated with it. So some of the good is the rules are really quick and easy to learn. It's easy to just pick up once you've figured out how to do it. It moves really, really fast, really rapid. The other good thing is just the fact that you can get so many people around the table playing this. And you could also say one of the good things is we have several copies of it in the Scarab Game Library, so multiple people could check it out at once. So some of the bad that I'm going to talk about with this is, at least with the deluxe edition, the dice that it has are kind of small, and because of all the different colors and such, they can be a little difficult to read. They're not really hard for us to read, because this is kind of the same dice that we've been using for years for Shadowrun, and so we're just kind of used to that. But that has nothing to do with Roll for It. As far as the deluxe edition, another thing that's kind of bad is the tin. Once you've kind of opened it up and put everything into the nice little bag that it comes with, the tin doesn't really want to close all the way quite like it did when we first got it, when it was still shrink wrap. As far as some others, I mentioned the artwork on this thing is really nice. The cards in the deluxe edition are pretty nice. They actually hold up really well. There's really not too much more to say about this game. It's pretty cut and dry. It's again, like I said, very quick, very easy to pick up. Where would be a good place for somebody to find this game if they wanted to check it out and play it?
I would say the Scarab Game Library.
That's right, the Scarab Game Library. And again, that's going to be the either deluxe edition or the red or the purple box, depending on how many people you want to play with. So hey guys, this is John with the Scarab Swarmcast, but you probably already knew that because you're listening to the Scarab Swarmcast right now. It's complicated. Try not to think about it too much. And I have with me here, from Ninth Level Games, Chris O'Neill. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Hey John, how are you?
I'm doing great. I understand you've been a really busy person.
I've been busy. We have a lot of, we're making a lot of games, and we're doing a lot more than we used to. So it's exciting. It's an exciting time for Ninth Level.
That's awesome stuff. I'm glad to hear about that. I understand that you're going to be coming down our way in January to Scarab. Is that correct?
I'm going to be coming to Scarab because you made me an offer that I can't refuse, which is come down to Scarab and help you run a Midnight Massacre.
Since you brought up that topic so coyly and unplanned.
Completely unplanned. Set up at all.
A lot of folks have been asking me what the Midnight Massacre is, and I've tried to explain them, and they always look at me with blank looks. So what is this Midnight Massacre?
So the legend of the Midnight Massacre is pretty straightforward. So when we first created Ninth Level Games and we started making Kobolds Ate My Baby, our home convention is the Origins Convention in Columbus, Ohio. And we decided we needed to do something to stand out from the crowd. And that thing that we decided to do was, let's see how many people we can get playing Kobolds all at the same time and see how many Kobolds we could actually kill. And we started doing that like right when Kobolds was first created. So we're talking like the late 90s. And it happens every year at Origins. It's happened a few times at Gen Con. It's happened once at DexCon. And so now it's going to happen at Scarab. We're going to get together, get a bunch of people, as many people as we can, to all play the same Kobolds adventure at the same time, you know, which leads to a whole lot of shenanigans. And we'll see how many of those little orange buggers we can kill.
It also leads to a cacophony of All Hail King Torg echoing out.
There's definitely a lot. There's a lot of back and forth, right? So most of the video that you can find on the internet of anyone yelling All Hail King Torg is probably from a massacre.
Yes, they're very impressive videos, too, I might add.
Most of the Midnight Massacres, we tend to try to create something special for each one, and a lot of them have turned into little Cobalt books over the years. So things like A Game of Torgs or, that started out as a massacre. It was a massacre before it was anything else. And
that got played at Scarab that same year that you were going to rent it at Origins, in fact.
That is absolutely correct. In fact, it got played at Scarab before it got played anywhere else. Yeah. Scarab was one of my dry runs for that. But the one year at Origins, we did hand puppets. They were orange paper bag hand puppets. And then we had everyone at the end of the night, after the stroke of midnight, and we had murdered as all of the kobolds that we could murder, we had them lemming-like jump off of a cliff. It was just a sea of orange paper bags that were, decorated like kobolds.
Oh, man. And this year, you actually told me that if I wrote this one, it might actually get run at Origins. So I admit I'm chomping at the bit on that.
I'm stoked to see that. Actually, last year's Origins module was called Save vs. Death. It was a tribute to the modules of Gary Gygax, and it was written by Patrick Clapp for the same reason, where Patrick was like, I have this idea for a massacre, it would be cool. And I was like, well, if you write it, we'll run it. And he was like, what? So, you are the kobold dude, John. I mean, so.
Kobold dude abides.
That would be great.
So that's going to be the Midnight Massacre. It's going to be at Scarab. It's going to be Friday night. It's not going to start at midnight. It's going to start at around 8 p.m. And it's going to go till midnight, ? Because I think they kick us out of the place around 2 or something like that.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay there.
Yeah.
If you have the time and you can make it out to that event, you should totally do it. It is definitely, there isn't anything else like it from a role-playing game perspective. Normally, everyone's trying to be nice and quiet to the people around them so that everyone can play their own game, and this is not that.
Yep, and for all you Pathfinder Society guys that are going to be there, I know for a fact there's not going to be a special being run on Friday night. So, since you've got nothing better to do...
Oh, yeah, you should totally come out.
Totally come by. I hear Dale Collins might be giving out a special boon just for that. That's not official. You didn't hear it from me. He'll probably deny it as well.
Ninth Level has been known to give prizes for things like this. So that's a true statement.
All right, Chris. Well, thank you for coming on here and helping explain what the Midnight Massacre is all about.
Very exciting. Very exciting. We'll see you in January, John.
Yes, looking forward to it. So that's going to wrap up this episode of the Scarab Swarmcast. I hope everybody had fun. We talked with Sarah Erickson of Renegade Games. You guys should check out their games. You're going to be able to find their stuff at Scarab Gaming Convention. Plus, she told you how you can go onto Facebook and Twitter and such and possibly win some free games from them. We did some game reviews, so awesome job, guys, with those really interesting, fun game reviews. These are, again, games that you can also check out from the Scarab Game Library and that you'll be able to see at Scarab Game Convention when you come this January. And, of course, I snuck in a thing there with where Chris O'Neill and I talked about what the Midnight Massacre for Kobolds Ain't My Baby is all about and how you can check out that fun that's going to be coming to Scarab Gaming Convention as well. So I'll leave you guys with that. And remember, as always, if you have any comments or questions or feedback from us, you can hit up the Scarab Swarmcast on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter at the Scarab Swarmcast. And you can always email us anything you need to email us to swarmcast@sc-a-r-a-b.com. Normally, we have some music on from MC Lars at mclars.com and Midnight Syndicate at midnightsyndicate.com. But I don't really think we had a lot of music on them from today. In fact, this is a relatively music-free episode, if I do say so. So that's kind of impressive. Whoa. Hey.
About the keyboard setup.
Whoa. Okay. What the heck's going on? Toast. Hey, John. Toast, what's going on over there?
Oh, well, me and the guys got our song ready to perform for you.
You remember.
Okay, well.
The non-D song?
I guess Toast is... Oh, that's right, I asked him to record a non-D song. So Toast is going to take us out with a non-traditional non-D song for your holiday enjoyment. So sit back and enjoy.
Okay, we're ready back here.
This better be good, Toast.
Oh, it's going to be good. Hit it, guys! We take what we want and do anything that we wish. We got no respect for animal, bird, or fish. The grass does not grow on the places where we stop and stand.
Riddle bottom nightmare brand.
We know we're a mess, but I does not like to be clean. We don't brush our teeth, cause our toothache can help us stay mean. We don't wish to learn, but we hate what we don't understand.
Leave a bottom!
When you see it's coming, you better start a running. We're always starting trouble, and we're happy as when things get out of hand. Rivers are for boiling, parties are for spoiling. We eat it like a sitting powder, rescue and terrorize the land.
Riddle bottom nightmare burn.
We laugh in your face, or we practice our growl and our sneer. We break up your place, we are dangerous when we are near. And when we are done with our song, who will get the biggest hand? Who?
Rhythm of a Nightmare Band! Rhythm of a Nightmare Band!
That's it. That's the end of this episode of the Scarab Swarmcast. If you liked this, or even if you didn't, feel free to send us an email at swarmcast@scarab.com. That's S-C-A-R-A-B. Lots of little dashes in there. Or you can leave us a message on Facebook. Yeah, Facebook. If you want us to read any of your comments on the show, let us know. Hey, subscribe to our show. Check out the show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Or you can grab that new RSS feed from our website. You can get our website off of Facebook or off of Scarab's website. Ah, it's all a bunch of internet flibbity-jibbity. So, until next time, when you think of Scarab's Wormcast, think of this podcast. And when you think of Toast, think of me!